Okay, I'm ready.
All right. One, I'm recording.
What? On one?
Hey guys, this is Wholesale Landing Podcast. This is Jeff. Over there is Matthew. I don't know how much of that beginning is going to be edited out and left in, but welcome back. I think this is actually our first podcast of the season.
I think technically it is, yes, because the last one was pre-opening day. Since then, both of us have disregarded baseball altogether and taken up a life of both crime and volcano hunting.
And if you think about it, right now the Mariners are half game back at the Rangers. They basically have as many wins as losses. Like, the season never even started. It's just starting now. They've played, 72 games? They've got 90 games left. Yeah, so it's a 90-game season. This would be a reasonable baseball season. 90 games. Play every other day.
That'd be completely unreasonable and terrible. I hate off days.
And then you shrink the rosters to 10 players. Levon Hernandez would get so paid. Speaking of Levon Hernandez,
Levon Hernandez will be the starting pitcher of the next game, or yeah, I guess I'll have this up before that game starts. The next game that the Mariners will play, barring some sort of unforeseen
tragedy.
Or non-tragedy that just prevents him from starting.
I was going bigger scale. I wasn't thinking of Levon so much as the city of D.C. and the entire team. But yes, Levon Hernandez having something happen would be far more likely and less a tragedy.
Yeah, he could just get the flu, Jeff. God.
Or he could, yeah, that's true. God, I hope he doesn't get the flu. Because I want to face him. Well, I don't want to face him. Although I probably could hit him. I could probably make contact against Levon Hernandez. It's always...
He does not throw very hard.
No, he does not. He throws that big looping curveball, which I'm sure we'll hear a lot about. And we'll get to see it, and we'll get to see people try to hit it, and it's going to be really embarrassing to lose to him because what I recall of Levon Hernandez, I don't know if this is true, but I seem to think that like 5 or 6 years ago, he was just absolute shit, and then he became good again. But I don't know if that was just Baseball Prospectus ripping on him because Baseball Prospectus was hyperbolic.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that he got good again, more that he got less bad. I mean, he looked like he was on his way out of baseball with Arizona. And he had 90 walks and 90 strikeouts, 78 walks, 6 hit by batter. So over 200 innings, he basically struck out as many batters as he put on base. Mm. And that's awful, you know, coupled with a lot of home runs, although that's Arizona. But he was... Oh my God, he was so bad.
Really? What?
Yeah, he's never been good or even really average, at least in the most recent history. It's just somehow he keeps pitching because you could basically sign him and be like, well, he'll throw 200 innings.
Or if you were the 2004 Montreal Expos, 255 innings. Wow, he led the league in... And he's pitched 3 years in a row. He exceeded 200.
He went from Arizona to Minnesota to Colorado to the Mets to the Nationals within approximately 2 calendar years. So, I think that kind of... I don't know what it is about him. He doesn't get hurt. But he is legitimately bad. I don't know why teams keep signing him.
I guess it's the whole... If you are an innings eater, it doesn't matter how bad you are. Like, if you're a bad pitcher, but you can throw a lot of innings, that's appealing for some reason, as if you couldn't get those innings eaten by somebody else. But,
I understand the idea of maybe signing Levon Hernandez as kind of like, well, everybody needs starting pitching depth, and you never know when all of our starting pitchers will become Oakland Athletics and get injured. But why not? It's not that he gets contracts or get signed, it's that he gets major league starting jobs each year. Why is he not a AAA pitcher at this point who just kind of hangs around until somebody gets injured?
Well, maybe he needs his ERA to get back over 4, because at least since he's gotten to Washington, at least he's been reasonably good. And granted, nobody noticed because, you know, the Nationals.
Yeah.
But
which
still,
is another thing. I was templating out the preview, which will run either before or after this post, depending on whenever I get around to it. But as always, when I was filling in the the respective records, and, you know, like, okay, well, Mariners update, 2 wins, 1 loss, that's easy. Okay, now fill in Nationals. They're what? How are they not terrible? Which is, I imagine, probably what everybody else thinks when they look at us or the Pirates.
Yes. I was supposed to respond in that situation.
That was end of thought there, period.
Yeah. I was actually, just earlier Monday afternoon, I was looking at the standings, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to ignore the top of the standings. I'm going to ignore the bottom of the standings. So let's look at the teams who are around 500. You've got the Mariners. You've got the Blue Jays, who are permanently 500. They actually all have...
Yeah.
I don't have a joke about this. They're just always that team who is 500. But then you have the Pirates, who are currently, as of this speaking, 35-36. The Mets are there. The Nationals are there. There's some weird teams. And the Reds are there, but I guess I kind of expected the Reds to be okay. But it's just... Yeah. So the Nationals, the Mariners, and the Pirates are probably those teams that people look at and think, "What? No, there's that is
no, right. Yeah, those are terrible teams. How is this possible?"
Granted, the Mariners are much, much closer to first than the other teams are, just because the Mariners are chasing, a worse team than, you know, the Phillies,
yeah,
the Brewers and the Cardinals. But still, yeah, I think, I don't know off the top of my head, but I feel like the Nationals have won something like 8 games in a row.
7-9, I think, is what it was last, something like that.
Yeah, so they won 9 in a row, then they lost on Sunday to the Orioles. And Chris Jakubauskas, what do you know? But yeah, you look at him, and I remember I was writing about when Ryan Zimmerman got hurt. I had abdominal surgery, and the Nationals were bad, then it got worse. Now I was thinking, well, by the time Zimmerman comes back, it doesn't matter, because they'll be out of the race. It'll just be nice to have him back in the lineup. Turns out it's going to be really nice to have him back in the lineup, because they could actually make a playoff run. Not that I think they're going to. But they do still have that potential because they're not that far out. They have Zimmerman back. You'd think Jason Worth is going to get better than he is because, by the way, he has not been very good. Jordan Zimmerman, I like a lot. I liked him before his surgery. I don't think the Mariners have to face him unless they skip a spot in their rotation, but he's a really good young pitcher. He's only 25, throws hard in his bats. Matches are interesting, and then you throw in the whole farm system, and I guess you could even make the argument the Nationals are not that different from being the Mariners.
Just with a way worse starting rotation. Not as bad hitting, including one Mike Morse, somehow, yeah, who has an OPS of 921.
Mike Morse has been an absolute flyer. He doesn't walk. He still doesn't walk. He strikes out a fair amount. He's not like a contact hitter or a discipline hitter. He just hits the ball hard. And if you remember, I always kind of try to compare Matt Tuiasosopo to Mike Morrison, but I meant that dismissively, like, oh, he won't be good. But it turns out that Mike Morse is good, so it makes me reevaluate the whole Matt Tuiasosopo thing. It doesn't, by the way, I'm saying that's a bigger speech. But I don't watch Mike Morse because I like to watch teams I care about, but apparently, I mean, he has 13 doubles, 13 home runs. He's slugging .564. He's taken over for Adam LaRoche, who's out for the year at first base, and that's turned into a huge upgrade for the Nationals because Morse is hitting the crap out of the ball. He hit in a part-time role, I think, last year.
Yes.
I think he even came the year before that, if I'm not... Yes. Oh, no. No, not really. He hit for some power. Anyway, since joining the Nationals, Mike Morse has batted nearly 600 times, and he slugged .533. I don't know about his defense. He's not very disciplined, but he clearly hits the ball very hard. And I kind of... When he was a Mariner, I always kind of thought of him as a singles hitter, maybe some gap doubles. I did not think he would be a 30 home run kind of guy, even a 40 home run kind of guy, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's a real awkward, just I can't even like visualize Mike Morse being that kind of power threat, but it is really interesting that as of right now, and at least, well, until he gets worse, Mike Morse has not only a higher slugging, well, he actually is outstripping Albert Pujols in all three of the triple slash lines.
And Pujols isn't going to be getting any better.
No. So, as far as, he doesn't walk, but he is a higher on-base percentage than Albert Pujols.
I'm looking at Morse's hit tracker page. He's hit home runs all around the field. He's got 3 home runs beyond 440 feet, which, for those of you who don't know, that's a very long home run, and it implies that he has a lot of power in his body. He's not just hitting a whole bunch of Jose Lopez, you know, doily home runs. He's hitting the ball hard to all fields. And so this puts us kind of in an awkward position because we didn't care about Mike Morse. We didn't think he had much of a future with the Mariners. I think he was kind of like a Greg Dobbs where, oh, he's gone, whatever. And I still don't know if he's going to be very good. He is 29 years old. He's not like a blossoming superstar, but he did get traded for Ryan Langerhans, and that might end up being one of those weird trades that looks really bad in hindsight that nobody really thought about at the time. Because I was excited to have Langerhans. I think a lot of people were excited to have Langerhans as depth.
I was almost equally excited to be having Ryan Langerhans as to not have Mike Morse anymore. And I don't know if this trade ever has any potential to look really bad, because the only way it looks really bad is if Mike Morse like keeps up this 900 OPS thing, which, I mean, it would look bad in just only hindsight. And I think right. In the way that even people who wanted to slam the trade would have been like, well, nobody saw that. It's not like Astrobal Cabrera, where it was like, it's almost a more extreme Sinchu Chu, but Sinchu Chu at least hit in the minors and had some defensive value. Mm-hmm. It's just always a question. It just, nobody ever thought he would hit lefties. And Mike Morris, it was more like nobody thought he would really hit anything, and he can't play anywhere.
When the Mariners traded Morris, it was in the middle of the 2009 season, he had a major league slugging percentage under 400, and he was just kind of a gap and a singles hitter in Tacoma. And now,
right, without
now
a position.
Without a position. I mean, I still figure he probably can't play defense. I know he was playing the outfield with the Nationals, but I don't think that's a strength of his.
Well, but, it should be mentioned that the Nationals' outfield defense is terrible.
Well,
which might be because of Mike Morse playing there.
Well, yeah, he's started half of his games in the outfield, half of them at first base, for whatever that's worth, but I don't know who he's been playing with in the outfield. Rink Ankiel, Jason Worth, Lance Nick. Wow, how is this team good? Weird. They have a better run differential than the Mariners do.
National League, I assume.
Yeah. But, yeah, so Morris, I don't really have a finishing thought except for, hey, by the way, he's still playing and he's a pretty good hitter. And, it would be nice to have that hitter on the Mariners, I guess, at DH where he belongs.
Yeah, he actually would make a decent right-handed version of a DH platoon, which the Mariners are kind of missing right now. I mean, because really what we have out of that whole situation is Greg Howman, and he shouldn't be DHing because a lot of his value is tied up in defense.
Yeah, he really shouldn't be playing that much at all, despite what he's shown so far. And as much as I love watching Greg Holman, I think he's... I mean, it's clear when you watch Greg Holman for one game, if he's starting in the outfield, you see most, if not all, of his skills, depending on whether he hits the ball. You can see that he is like a five-tool prospect who doesn't have like the toolkit to put them all in, so they're just kind of like scattered on the floor, and he needs... Like, if he's going to a work site, he can't just carry them all.
Yeah.
It's just very awkward kind of whatever. I don't know where that's going. But I like Greg Holman's defense a lot. I like watching him hit for power. But, I mean, yeah, as a right-handed power bat solution now, I think that's falling a little too much in love with the youth on the Mariners roster. It's one thing to be supportive of Mike Karp. It's one thing to be supportive even of Carlos Peguero, I guess. But Greg Holman, I guess he's like a right-handed Peguero of sorts with defensive value, but he's not as powerful. So, yuck.
I don't know. Yeah, he's not as exciting as an offensive prospect, but he also is not as terrifying as a defensive one. So, I can see, like, overall, I think a Howman-Peguero left field comparison, I think, comes out pretty even, maybe. Maybe even a tinge to Hallman's side, if you actually factor in the defense.
And I guess Hallman is, you know, Peguero at this point is a straight-up platoon player. I don't think he has a prayer against lefties. Hallman can at least, I don't know if you can say hold his own, but he could still stand in against righties, or almost as well as he can against lefties. But Peguero, I don't know, if you haven't looked at Peguero's split, it's rare that a player gets platooned as stringently as he has been platooned by Eric Wedge, who is clearly has nightmares about accidentally letting Carlos Peguero face a left-handed pitcher, which is just as well, because we've seen all the bats Peguero's broken lately. If he faced a lefty, he might actually kill somebody. But he's batted 109 times so far in the major leagues. Peguero has 6 times against lefties. That's it. That's incredibly rare.
That's a phenomenal substitution rate.
Yeah, and I mean, he's running an OBP of 266, so it's not like he's some kind of platoon wunderkind, but Man, what a weird player to have playing a prominent role on this baseball team right now.
Yeah. Although, you bringing up the on-base percentage, it's so kind of tangentially related. It's so weird to me that how much harder it is this year to get a mental grasp on triple slash lines and OPS and things like that this year, because just offense is so down.
Yeah.
Like, we all are, I think, fairly familiar with the sort of hoopla around Albert Pujols, not the injury that just happened, but his slow start offensively to the season, and, oh, he's not hitting for power, and the home runs of et cetera, and so forth. But, and it's true. I mean, you think of Albert Pujols, and you think of this perennial best hitter in the major leagues, kind of, you know, no doubter sort of thing, 1,000 OPS guy, and he's down to 850 this year, and that's like a huge drop. You're like, whoa, there's something hugely wrong with Albert Pujols. But if you look at it as a percentage of, based on, you know, the league, if you look at like OPS plus, or if you look at like WOBA plus, he's still well above league average. He's only down a couple points from like last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just league average has gotten so bad this season for whatever reason that it's almost misleading to quote things like just quoting straight OPS.
Keep talking for a minute. I want to find something. All right, I found it. So this is a quick, hasty example. So right now, Albert Pujols, I think, has a OPS plus of 140, if I'm remembering this morning correctly. And he has an OPS of like 855.
855 now, is correct, yes.
In 2002, that was just a quick selection. 2002, Scott Rolen, he was a Cardinal, he posted an OPS of 915, good for an OPS plus of 139. So that tells you something. Just there's a 60-point difference between Rolen's OPS in 02 and Pujols' difference now, but their OPS plus is basically identical. That's how far down offense is, and I'm sure there are better and more concise examples of how far down offense is, like just quoting the numbers, but there's your color. And in the American League, OPS is down 16 points from where it was last year, which was already down 30 points from the year before. So OPS is down from 764 in 2009, when the Mariners, by the way, couldn't hit at all, to 718 now, which is a drop of 46 points, which is just enormous. And God, what's the Mariners' run pace right now? They've scored 254 and 70. Oh, my God.
Well, it's better than last year.
They're on pace for 588, which, okay, sub 600.
Is 70 runs better than last year.
And, man, I've always kind of figured those rare sub 600 run offenses are like, holy shit bad. And granted, the Mariners' offense is kind of like, holy shit bad. But with offense being so low, it's not as holy shit bad as...
Yeah, so I mean, it is maybe arbitrarily assigning percentages 80% the case that the Mariners can't hit, and 20% the case that just all of baseball can't hit, and it really does kind of drag the whole thing down, or is fortunate for us because maybe we couldn't have hitters anyways.
So here's an interesting thing that I
also noticed. Safeco Field probably plays a part of that, so maybe throw in 5% for Safeco.
Yeah. So earlier in the year, I believe you remember how much of a hoopla we made about how the Mariners were among or were the league leaders in drawing walks. We
yes.
all remember that. This is when Jack Cuss was flipping out. There was like all of our runs were scored on bases loaded walks. So this is going, the Mariners in April had a 656 OPS, 656. Mariners in June have a 658 OPS. Basically the same, right? You all got those numbers, 656, 658. In April, the Mariners had an OBP of 316. All right, not bad. That's probably about league average, all things considered. In June, 281. Mariners have started hitting dingers only. That's what they do. And see it because, you know, you have Miguel Oliva, who's hitting well now in one way. He has one thing that he does, literally one thing that he does, because he sure as hell doesn't catch the ball.
Or draw walks anymore.
No, he does one thing. And Justin Smoke, he walks less. Sean Figgins doesn't walk anymore. But more importantly, you look at, instead of having guys like Milton Bradley, Ryan Langerhans, no, now we have Carlos Peguero. We have Greg Hallman. We have Carlos Peguero and Greg Hallman.
Adam Kennedy, too, also does not draw walks, by the way.
I mean, the guy we were hoping would walk, you know, Figgins is just, it's like pitchers realized, oh, what were we doing? Brendan Ryan has slowed down, I think, with the walks, even though I mean, you wouldn't count on Brendan Ryan for walks, but he has walked a lot. Ackley should help, but I mean, Ackley is a contact hitter, so he's not going to draw a ton of walks because he's going to put a lot of balls in play. I think his OBP will still be fine, but this is a very different kind of bad offense than what it was earlier in the year. And it's not like Mike Karp's going to walk a ton. Jack Cust seems like he's on the outs for whatever reason, which I kind of get and kind of don't. It's weird. OBP, I think, a lot of people are going to think about, oh, this Mariners team has a lot of power. And it's true, but they don't get on base. And I don't see it.
Well, they have a lot of power comparatively.
Right.
They have more power than they have ability to get on base or hit for average. Or steal bases or get hit by pitch. Also, they suck at that, by the way.
All but one of them.
All but Brendan Ryan.
Yeah. Which makes up for his low walk total, in part.
Yeah.
Everybody should pay more attention to hit by pitches.
They should. It's an important underappreciated category in terms of for both hitters and pitchers.
Obviously, it sucks, and if you're a hitter, you don't really want it most of the time. But for example, Ichiro, one of the few things he hasn't been able to do is get hit by pitches. He just doesn't do it. He's been hit 47 times in his entire career, which is an average of just over 4 a year. That's very low, considering I'm pretty sure Carlos Quinn gets hit 4 times a day.
And the fact that Ichiro has about 750 plate appearances a season.
Yeah. Yep.
It's very low. Do we want to, I know you posted a lot about Ackley in the review of his weekend. Do we want to talk about anything else about him?
We can hit on Ackley a little bit, but I hit
on Ackley a lot. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, it's so dreamy. So Cust, we remember that Cust is kind of on a hot streak. I think it was in May. Jack Cust was hitting the ball. He actually got some home runs. For God's sake, he had doubles, home runs, walks. It was all good for Jack Cust. And then he fell into this very small slump where between June 3rd and June 14th, oh, he has not played for a while.
Yeah.
Went for 21. But realistically, it was between June 3rd and June 7th where Cust went 1-for-12. And then Eric Wood was like, all right, that's enough. You're done. And he just doesn't play. And I get it because Jack Cust, from what we've observed, he looks like he's pretty much running on fumes, even though he had a good May. If his season were to end now, and then you look at his numbers, you think, wow, yeah, that is a clear decline.
Right. Yeah, the power's gone.
Yeah, he was already in a decline. Yeah. We knew this coming into the season. But it's weird that he was essentially benched so shortly after he was the team's best hitter. And I don't want to go to the extreme and say that Eric Wedge doesn't value walks, but I wonder what's going on and if Wedge is just like, you know what, Cust isn't going to help. Let's get some young guys in here. They're unlikely to be significantly worse, so let's just get a different attitude, get a different look. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't care so much if we were 6 games out, but being half a game, soon to be 1 game out, I would rather they play their best lineup. And it's not so much, you know, if he wants to sit Cust to give Mike Karp a start at DH, that's fine, because at least at this point I'm interested in seeing what Mike Karp can do at the major league level. Because anytime anybody destroys Tacoma that much, I just kind of like, well, we need to see what he can do, because it doesn't really matter what his old scouting reports are. He might somehow have become like a Nelson Cruz. But the idea of starting Adam Kennedy at DH, and I commented on this in one of the recap things, the idea of starting Adam Kennedy at DH over Jack Cust, I don't want to say pisses me off, that's too strong of a reaction, but it irks me because that it doesn't fall really into any category that you could, any reasonable category. It's not playing the youngsters. Adam Kennedy is somehow 3 years older than Jack Cust. Jack Cust is 32. People, I mean, he seems like he's 39, but he's 32, and Adam Kennedy is 35, at least baseball age-wise. I don't know their date of births offhand. And Adam Kennedy is not any better of a hitter than Jack Cust. he doesn't draw walks. He hits, well, he has hit for a little bit more power, which is damning to both people to say that, but it, you still got to think the power potential in Jack Cuss is higher than the power potential in Adam Kennedy.
Yeah. And because Kennedy's been platooned to some degree, I think.
He's been platooned a ton. Or at least as platooned as a normal person gets platooned.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it's just, and also on the sheer fact that is if you don't start Cuss at DH, if he's on the bench, he can really only come in one role, and that's to pinch it for the DH. Or to pinch it and then get replaced. Whereas if you have Adam Kennedy on the bench, he can come in, he can pinch run, because he is quick.
Mm-hmm.
He can come in and take over at first, can come in and take over at second. He's not going to come in for Figgins as a defensive replacement, but he gives you flexibility on the bench, whereas if you don't start Jack Cust, you basically might as well tell him to go hit the bar. It's a little irritating because there just seems to be a whole, not just with Eric Wedge, but with a lot of the fans in general, a lot of loving of Adam Kennedy, which is like, you know, his WOBA is equal to Jack Cuss, who everybody hates. And everybody was like, well, Jack Cuss doesn't respond to this roster. Well, Adam Kennedy, he's 35.
A lot of people have pointed out that Adam Kennedy is posting like the best numbers of his career, which I don't know if that's true. I can do a quick scan. And by OPS plus, he's basically even with his 2002. 10 years ago, Adam Kennedy was hit, whatever. But again, what that ignores, Kennedy is 157 trips to the plate against righties, 37 against lefties. That's not a normal split. That is a platoon split.
Yeah.
Where he has been protected from lefties, and it's just made his numbers better. Just like with Carlos Piguero, if you put Carlos Piguero in an everyday job, he would be a complete fucking nightmare because he would have to face lefties, and lefties would kill him. And Adam Kennedy, I don't think Adam Kennedy is like a pile of shit against lefties. He's faced more than 1,000 of them in his career. He can do okay, but he'd look worse, and then he would drag his numbers down. So don't evaluate somebody by their platoon split numbers because they'll look better. It's just naturally, it's inflation of the numbers. Adam Kennedy's not a good hitter, and the great mistake is judging Adam Kennedy by his context where he looks good on this team, but he's not. And
no, I'd say he's useful. Certainly with the way his defense has been pretty useful. And if he's taking grounders at third base, the ability to come in at first, second, and third and at least be, you know, not terrible is fine. And anybody who has close to a league average bat this year is useful for the Mariners. I don't care where he plays. But it's just, I don't want to see Jack Cuss needlessly thrown overboard because I also still think that there's some power to be found there. I think people are maybe a little too shell-shocked by how awful he looked in April.
Yeah.
And, it's just more of a, I just want, you know, let's keep those perspectives in mind. Keep the platooning things in mind. Those things are important.
I was checking, and since April 27th, Jack Cust has slugged .407 with 10 doubles, a triple, and 2 homers, which is not
Great, but again, keep reminder that that's at Safeco and in this very depressed 2011 run environment.
And in, you know, whatever cold weather consideration there is, that Jack Cust, it's not like he started well and then started to fade out. He actually started terribly and he got better and then he wound up on the bench after a couple bad games. So I don't want this to come out like some sort of fervent defense of Jack Cust, because ultimately I don't think he's the key to anything this year. But you don't, if he's on the team, you don't DH Adam Kennedy, is I think.
Yes, that is the point. Yeah. You just, if you need one of those two to start a DH, you start Jack Cust and you leave Adam Kennedy in case Dustin Ackley commits 4 errors at second base and you need to pull him to keep him from breaking down and crying. Or whatever.
Doing lines. Apparently, McCovey Chronicles, the Giants blog, back in 2009, they tried to Google bomb the rumor that Dustin Ackley was a coke fiend so that he would flip to the Giants. It didn't work, but if you start hearing about that, that's where that came from. Or it also came from Dustin Ackley if he actually does a lot of cocaine. The cool thing about this is that now he has a cover.
Right. It's a free excuse. Note to Dust Ackley, that's not a free excuse. Don't do cocaine.
Man, Dustin, if you're listening to this, I'll tell you what I'll do offline. We were going to talk about some. Oh, we were going to talk about Ackley, which is that's a convenient transition. So, cocaine to Dustin Ackley. Here we are. We're going to talk about a little bit. Where was there anything that you wanted to add to what has already been put on the website, or that we've already said with regard to cocaine?
I was just going to. I think the thing that struck me because I actually. Well, I think I well, so I didn't see most of Sunday's game because I was out doing things outdoors, but I did watch.
Nerd.
Yes, nerd. Right. I did watch Friday's game, which is a rarity for me, and I was watching Saturday's game in attendance, which is an even more rarity, even bigger rarity for me. And I guess the thing that I've noticed about Dustin Ackley, because I don't get to watch him with Tacoma. Well, I mean, I could, but I don't, is that his swing looks not powerful. Just it kind of looks like he chops down on the ball. And it looks like he profiles as a ground ball hitter. But then, and you mentioned about this, just the wrist speed or whatever, because he would just take this swing that looks like, oh, that's a chopper to short. And instead, it's a kind of a line drive fly ball the other way into the gap that just hangs up a little too high right now so far through the 11 plate appearances and 10 balls in play. It just, he got a lot of carry on the ball, which was just really surprising looking at his swing only. And it does give me a lot of, I guess, hope for his future. It's weird to be, there's, maybe I'm just too a nerd to like Michael Saunders, where now every time I watch him hit, I was just like, I see every one of his flaws, and I can't see. Michael Saunders has reached the point where you mentioned about like Sean Figgins, where it's just like, I can't see how he succeeds. It just, I want him to. I really, really want him to, but just, there's like 600 at bats in the past that I have watched where he has failed, and now it's very hard for me to be like, oh yeah, this thing can work. And maybe it's just because I have now have seen 11 at-bats of Dustin Ackley, and he has not failed. But it's hard for me to be like, oh, he's going to slump at some point. But
yeah, but what is his slump going to look like? Has Michael Saunders ever had a stretch of 11 major league plate appearances that looked like this? I know that Saunders had a streak where he had a lot of pull power, and that's great, but you want to see a guy like Saunders with a long swing that everybody knows has a long swing, and you want to see if he can go to all fields. I don't think Saunders has ever shown that. I think all of his hits the other way, or not all of them, but most of them were just these little dinkers, kind of like accidental doubles or something.
Yeah. And also he just doesn't have the command of the plate that Dustin Ackley does, which is not an insult, because pretty much maybe 30 people have the command of the plate that Dustin Ackley does.
And one of them is benched by the Mets.
But so it is very hard to see how he would slump. I guess what it all comes down to is that just mentally trying to prepare myself for that Dustin Ackley is a position player drafted and developed by the Mariners who we're going to have for the next 7 years. And I could see it's not in the sense of, oh, he's cost control and under team control for the next 7 years, is that he might now from here on out be the starting second baseman for the next 7 years and, you know, not be a liability.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing, I think, to grasp for me.
On that double play that he turned on Friday night, I was a little concerned. Granted, again, one double play, it means so little, but he didn't really move out of the way of a catcher barreling right down at him. So you'd hope that maybe he'd be a little more skittish, a little more careful. I guess maybe he realized how quickly he had to turn that play, but really don't want to see Dustin Ackley leave his MCL on the field or anything.
That would be tough to handle.
Yeah, I mean, after watching Dan Wilson tear his ACL, I just can't handle another homegrown superstar. Homegrown, Dan Wilson? I don't know where this is coming from. The thing about a Dustin Ackley slump, you were just talking about what it would look like, and I think it would look like a lot of moderate speed grounders pulled, and then he would hit a lot of those just hung up fly balls to left center. Like, he just misses the line drive singles and doubles, where they just kind of, he gets under the ball a little bit, maybe he gets pitched up in the zone, and so it would be a lot of, oh, we just missed. It wouldn't be an Ichiro slump where it's like, oh shit, you were worse than I am. When
Yeah, I think what I'm what's the crystallizing in my mind is what I'm trying to get at is that anytime that Dustin Ackley gets into a slump, I really feel like I'm going to be able to like look at his stats and then just look at his batting ball percentages and look at his batting average on balls in play and be like, oh, there it is. He's not slumping. He's just getting unlucky on batted balls, and that's it. And then I'm just... And at that point, the worry will leave my mind because I won't care if he's... Because at no point I'm going to be like, oh, has he lost power because, like every other Mariner hitter, he's, you know, not... who's not developed. He's old. Or... I mean, because he's got plate discipline, so it's like that, and that doesn't really slump so much. So, or it's not a subject to luck, I guess, is really the better term for things like, yeah, speed slumps, defense slumps. It's just not as luck dependent.
Yeah,
idiots. That's what you should have been saying the whole time.
Is a
Oh, what?
Nope, there goes my thought. Damn. Oh, it was so good. Ackley.
Well, here's a transition for you. So Ackley is now our second baseman for the future. You know who our old second baseman for the future used to be?
Brett Boone?
No. After that was Jose Lopez.
Jose Lopez.
Who has been called up by the Florida Marlins, the 1-746 in June Florida Marlins, who, due to a quirk in schedule, will actually be coming to Safeco Field this weekend, possibly starting Jose Lopez.
Yeah.
Note Lopez. To all you Jose Lopez fans.
All of you. Let's see. Lopez started a couple games at third. He started a game at designated hitter. Yeah, so I don't know.
He won't be doing that since we'll be playing under NL rules.
Oh, shit, you're right. So at third base, we'll probably see some Jose Lopez unless he gets dropped by the team that quickly. Or we'll see, hey, Greg Dobbs, yay, he's back.
Yes.
Jose Lopez. So Friday, not only does Felix Hernandez get to face Jose Lopez, he gets to face him at home on the road. Lopez gets to face those outfield walls again, and I don't want to sound like I like hate Jose Lopez because he's not our problem anymore. He's really nobody's problem anymore because there's no commitment to him. He's already been dropped by a team this year. But I feel bad for him, but it's just so comical that he is now 27 years old and he's a pile of shit. Like, there is no... He's done the Sean Figgins, like, way earlier than Sean Figgins did.
Right.
It hurts to look at his number. He's got a 4.96 OPS this year. Between last year and this year, he's at 5.88, which is bad. That's like a really bad OPS to have, even in this year. This is Major League Baseball, and I guess it's fitting that he's on the Marlins, because this Marlins team just signed Jose Lopez, they just signed Dwayne Wise, and they just signed my grandfather to manage their baseball. It's just, what the fuck happened to the Florida Marlins so quick?
It is rather remarkable. I do hope if Jose Lopez is playing third base on, is it Friday or whenever, when Felix is pitching / hitting against him, that I hope Felix drops a bunt down the third base line.
Unfortunately, I think Felix is a little too much pride to bunt.
Yeah. Still.
But here's the cool thing about facing the Marlins. Even though it looks like the Mariners are going to face Aníbal Sanchez, Ricky Nolasco, and Chris Volstead, they will not face Josh Johnson, who is the Marlins, you know, really amazing pitcher.
Nobody will be facing, except possibly a surgeon.
I think, yeah, he's got some inflammation. I think he's rehabbing. But the important thing is he won't be back until July, if then. So the Mariners will face a good pitcher in Aníbal Sanchez. He's probably going to throw 3 no-hitters on Friday. But then behind him, Ricky Nolasco gets hit a lot. Chris Volstead is not good. But it's a pretty good – for a pitching matchup against a team for the NL East, you know, you can do a lot better or worse. I don't know which perspective to take it from. But the Marlins, they really don't pitch very well. And they're in a ballpark that I'm pretty sure is friendly to pitchers, which makes things worse. But they can hit. They can hit a little bit, even though Hanley Ramirez has been terrible. Like, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, I guess there's a reason he got benched in Jack McKeon's first game. But I wouldn't think of psychologically, the idea of playing the Florida Marlins, especially given the fact that the whole managerial upheaval and this really, really gruesome June record, almost makes me feel bad, though, because now it's the whole expectations thing. And I mentioned this sort of when we were playing the Phillies, about how playing the Phillies is like playing the Angels when we had to face Jared Weaver and Dan Herron. But removed from the expectations of that we all hate the Angels, the Phillies are just kind of some team. And because you're going in there and you're having to face people like Roy Oswalt and Cole Hamels, who we both beat somehow, you feel the lowered expectations. You already feel like, oh, well, whatever. I can't get embarrassed by losing to Cole Hamels or Roy Oswalt and the Phillies. Mm-hmm. So it's almost, even if we lose, we don't lose. And if we win, you're just left there being like, how did we win? We still don't know how we won those games. But facing the Marlins when they're coming in on a 1-19 streak, it automatically just kind of infuses your mind with this, we should win. And now anything less than taking that series feels catastrophic almost. Yeah. And even if we sweep, it's like, well, okay, but we swept the Marlins. Everybody has swept the Marlins. I don't like those series because it feels like there's very little to gain.
Well, hopefully then. Right now the Marlins are playing the Angels, and hopefully the Marlins, play well against them. But right now the Marlins, if they have a decent series against the Angels, if they win 2 out of 3, maybe that'll make things a little better. They'll put the skid behind them. They have a new manager, a new very jittery, shaky, quiet voice in the clubhouse. And I don't know, we'll see how the Mariners do, but it kind of helps that right now the Rangers are playing. It doesn't help at all. The Rangers have a really easy schedule right now because they're playing the Astros. And they play some other team, then they play the Astros again. Where, I mean, with the Marlins, at least, do you think the Mariners have an opportunity to keep up with the Astros or with the Rangers? Because the Rangers have a weak schedule for a while. But it's just, those are trap games where I would so much rather both the Mariners and Rangers be playing hard teams than easy teams. Because I have a lot more faith in the Rangers beating easy teams than I do in the Mariners.
Maybe, yeah. I think it's offensive related for some reason. Just, when you're a low-scoring team, there's just more variability, I feel like, And so you never know when the offense is just going to score one run.
Yeah, I mean, Anibal Sanchez could easily just
anybody that. Could do that. Levon Hernandez could shut down the Mariners for 2 runs, and would anybody here be surprised? And by here, I mean listening, because the only person here right now is me, and I wouldn't be surprised, so that would have been a pointless question.
Well, no, because you just answered the question. The answer is no. Would anybody here be surprised? No, nobody would, says me.
In conclusion, nobody in either of our places would be surprised.
Hold on, I didn't. And I guess after the Marlins series, we got the Braves, but maybe we'll podcast next week. Woo! We don't have to talk about the Braves series just yet, but I will say that you should look up Dan Elgua's batting line, and then you should look up Dan Elgua's shiny new contract in case you want to feel better about Sean Figgins.
And you should. You should do both of those things, and then you should feel better about Sean Figgins.
Yeah. Matthew and I were remarking during Saturday's game. I forgot what the situation was, but Adam Kennedy, I think, was hitting against a lefty, was it? Or somebody was hitting against a lefty. And Matthew and I looked at each other like, wouldn't it be something if Eric Wedge pinch hit Sean Figgins here?
Oh, yeah, it was Kennedy. Kennedy facing a lefty in the... Well, he was supposed to face a lefty in a high-leverage situation.
Yeah. Before
Jamie Wright came in and blew the high leverage situation.
Oh yes, so Jamie Wright. There's a topic that I really don't want to talk about because it's so boring. But does Eric Wedge have the stones and the confidence to pinch hit Sean Figgins right now against a lefty? I would still rather have Figgins batting than Adam Kennedy. Even though it feels weird to say that because I don't know if it's actually true. But I'm pretty sure it's true that Figgins would give us better odds, no?
Well, I think probably, but then you'd have to factor in the pinch-hitting penalty, so that might make it... And either way, we're probably talking about, which 500 OPS do you prefer? So it might be negligible, but the very fact that it was negligible really, really wanted me to... really made me want to see it happen, just also to see the reaction of the crowd. It's the sort of move that I would have done just to intentionally piss off my fans.
Now batting for Ichiro. David Pollock. He does everything. I think David Pollock and Adam Kennedy are my two favorite. Without hats, they're not baseball players on this team. Just bald old white guys who look like they just sit on their deck and drink beer all day. And based on Adam Kennedy's off-season DUI, that is exactly what he does. Happened to somebody else's deck.
Wait, but David Pauly's not old and bald?
David Pauly is bald. I don't know if he's old.
He's bald?
He's pretty much completely bald.
Really?
Yeah, and he is 20. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like,
oh, bad news, David. You are 28 years old, barely. And, well, he's not old, but he looks like an old guy.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, kind of like, well, Colby Lewis is also a lot like David Bowie, where without the hat, you're like, whoa, put the hat back on. Nobody I would respect without it. I'm glad that Ackley's here to introduce some attractiveness to the team. It just makes things easier. Puts everybody in a better mood.
It really does. Now I guess the only question is like, well, not the only question. God, I fucking hate. Clichés of language are so stupid. A further question to ponder, which people were already pondering, is how long it takes Ackley to move out of the sixth or seventh spot in the batting order. He really is the perfect guy to be batting two, and we've been saying this since basically he was drafted, before he was drafted.
So I guess the issue is that, I shouldn't say, again, first of all, there are several issues. Second of all, it really doesn't matter that much if he moves up to number two, but one of the complications herein is that he wouldn't be displacing a Sean Figgins or somebody who doesn't fit in the role. Brendan Ryan is pretty much a manager's classic dream number two hitter, just because he's like, he's such a baseball player. He puts the ball in play and he always sacrificed for the team and giving people nicknames that end in Y and is just so much of a fit, even though he's really not a fit for the number two.
Yeah, it's because he's not got a good on base percentage. That was some great grammar right there too.
he's a hit and run kind of guy or a sack and run kind of guy.
He's a perfect, but he should be. That's the what we would want at like the number eight guy.
Yeah.
And not the number two so much. It would be really nice if we could have Ackley at number two or Ackley at three, even Smoke at four. And boy, if we could even just get 2010 Sean Figgins back, he would be a dream in the two hole. You could get three well above average on base percentages to start off each game with Justin Smoke sitting right behind him. We could actually not have that familiar three up, three down, top or bottom of the first inning, which seems to plague the Mariners.
Even without that that Figgins that we want, imagine against a righty starting with, let's see, Ichiro, Ackley, Karp, Smoke. That'll be, I mean, I don't want to say too much about Mike Karp. I don't know if he's actually good, but that's
You could even have Jack Cust behind that with Karp playing left field.
Yeah, that would be very irritating for opposing pitchers, I feel. But as far as Ackley's concerned, working in his favor is that Dustin Ackley also, like Brendan Ryan, has all the components of being a manager's dream.
Yeah, he's not going to strike out much. He's going to he's going to make contact when he needs to.
Yeah, and just personality wise, he's not going to like rub wedge the wrong way. He's a very disciplined, low key, go about his business kind of guy. So with Ryan, you have a guy who's like the incumbent who is a good fit for who's viewed as a good fit for the number two hole. He'll be hard to move, but it's not like Ackley would be some revolutionary, like, whoa, you can't just put an OBP guy at the top of the order just because he gets on base. No, Dustin Ackley does all the things that a manager wants a number two hitter to do.
He's just young.
And better than Brendan Ryan. And the only issue then is, would Eric Wedge suddenly make Dustin Ackley bunt all the time? But, well, actually, that's a question. Because I was looking at Brendan Ryan. Brendan Ryan has 9 sack bunts, but then Brendan Ryan is also not a good hitter. So.
And he also hasn't been in the two hole the entire time, so.
Yeah.
I can't really recall him bunting while number two.
Hey, you know Brendan Ryan's middle name? Wood. Almost Brandon Wood.
Brendan Wood Ryan?
Brendan Wood Ryan. Brendan Wood Ryan. It's the start of a question.
I was going to say, you know what? There's another post for either you, John Boys, or Grant. Players whose full names constitute the beginnings of a sentence.
So Brendan Ryan moved up to the two hole on May 30th. Since then, he has dropped down 4 bunts, whatever. I don't care about Brendan Ryan's bunts because he's a different hitter than Ackley, but yeah. I could just imagine Ackley being hitting number two. And then he'll drop down a bunt every like 3 weeks and people will just flip the fuck out. And I'll probably be one of them too because.
Well, the thing is, like, has anybody really flipped out about any of the bunts that nominally Eric Wedge has called this year?
but
I can't remember a single one. I'll grant it.
Here's the Mariners leaderboard: Brendan Ryan 9 bunts, Michael Saunders 4, Jack Wilson 3, Sean Figgins 2. Like, yeah. These aren't hitters that I want to see hit anyway.
Yeah, well, but I've seen, even if it feels like they've all come in very appropriate situations. It's not like early Don Wakamatsu 2009 when it was like the second inning and the leadoff man got on. Let's bunt him over to second. This is stupid. You know, it does not feel like any of them have ever come in that sort of situation. They've all been, you know, rather appropriate bunts. And at least one of those Brendan Ryan bunts was a squeeze.
That's true.
Which we're all in favor of doing way more often.
Yeah. Especially with this team, because I was actually thinking when I was writing about Dustin Ackley earlier on Monday, I was thinking, who are the hitters I trust the most to bring in a runner from third? Ackley? I have trouble trusting Ichiro. He hits a lot of ground balls.
Yes, you know, as we saw on Saturday.
As we saw on Saturday. I mean, Ryan, in theory, but not really, because he doesn't hit the ball hard. Justin Smoke, he strikes out a lot, even though I trust...
And he also has a decent number of pop-ups.
Yeah, so... And maybe even Ackley isn't a good one for that situation. It's just he hasn't spoiled anything yet. He's still a pure rookie who's only looked good. But squeezes do them. To completely change gears, and this is only real quick, I was just noticing that on Monday the Red Sox playing the Padres, and the Red Sox put together what is currently a 10-run bottom of the seventh. But here's how it started. Walk, RBI double. Okay, so now there's a man on second base, right? So after another out, there's two outs, man on second, intentional walk, next better, walk, next better, hit by pitch, run, next better, hit by pitch, run. I have seen the Mariners draw consecutive bases loaded walks. I have not seen consecutive bases loaded hit by pitches when the game is still close. That is weird. And the pitcher who did it is actually a good reliever. So, hey, Mariners, get hit by more pitches because it helps you as long as it's not in the wrist or the head.
Yes. Well, it helps the team. It doesn't so much help you.
Oh, yeah, it's actually one of the worst things you can do when you're... It's good for the team, so Brendan Ryan would probably be all about it. And, in fact, he is.
Along with squeeze bunts. Bam! Connection.
Brendan Ryan is just such a fun player. And he's not good. Well, he's not bad. He's not very good. But you look at his batting line, he's got an OPS plus of 79. His career OPS plus is 77. He's been exactly what he was supposed to be.
Yep.
And he's
good
awesome.
Defense.
Yeah.
And he's cheap, and he's a shortstop, and he's under team control for a couple more years.
For a long time. Can you imagine what a Brendan Ryan home run would look like?
I imagine it would be right down the left field line and like a row deep, and it wouldn't be at Safeco.
Texas.
Yeah. I could see that. It would basically look a lot like Sean Figgins' opening day home run, I feel like, but with closer to the line and less air under it. It'd be more like kind of a line drive thing.
Here's a weird thing to think about. Since 2007, which is when Brendan Ryan broke into the league, Sean Figgins has 11 home runs, Brendan Ryan has 9. Granted, Figgins has played more, but you think Sean Figgins is punchless? Brendan Ryan is a singles hitter. He is a pure singles hitter. He's not even like Ichiro singles hitter, because Ichiro, you see, pull the ball hard. Yeah, nope. Brendan Ryan hits singles between the infielders, which is fine because he does it enough because he plays really good defense. And he's awesome.
Yes, I agree. And you all agree as well, and that we shall all end on an agreement.
Until next time.
Until next time on the Lookout Landing podcast, when we all agree with something else.